Mark chapter 7, verses 1 to 23. You can find this on the Creator Hub. Is it up?
Yes.
Yep.
Yes.
Or it should be on the screen. Or you can just flip to your Bibles. Yep. The Pharisees and some of the teachers of the law who had come from Jerusalem gathered around Jesus and saw some of his disciples eating food with hands that were defiled, that is, unwashed. The Pharisees and all the Jews do not eat unless they give their hands a ceremonial wash, holding to the tradition of the elders. When they come from the marketplace, they do not eat unless they wash, and they observe many other traditions, such as the washing of cups, pitchers, and kettles. So the Pharisees and teachers of the law asked Jesus, "Why don't your disciples live according to the tradition of the elders instead of eating their food with defiled hands?" He replied, "Isaiah was right when he prophesied about you hypocrites. As it is written, 'These people honor me with their lips, but their hearts are far from me. They worship me in vain. Their teachings are merely human rules.' You have let go of the commands of God and are holding on to human traditions." And he continued, "You have a fine way of setting aside the commands of God in order to observe your own traditions. For Moses said, 'Honor your father and mother,' and anyone who curses their father or mother is to be put to death. But you say that if anyone declares that what might have been used to help their father or mother is a korban, that is, devoted to God, then you no longer let them do anything for their father or mother. Thus, you nullify the word of God by your tradition that you have handed down. And you do many things like that." Again, Jesus called the crowd to him and said, "Listen to me, everyone, and understand this. Nothing outside a person can defile them by going into them. Rather, it is what comes out of a person that defiles them." After he had left the crowd and entered the house, his disciples asked him about his parable. "Are you so dull?" he asked. "Don't you see that nothing that enters a person from the outside can defile them? For it doesn't go into their heart, but into their stomach, and then out of the body." In saying this, Jesus declared all foods clean. He went on, "What comes out of a person is what defiles them. For it is from within, out of a person's heart, that evil thoughts come. Sexual immorality, theft, murder, adultery, greed, malice, deceit, lewdness, envy, slander, arrogance, and folly. All these evils come from inside and defile a person."
Thanks, Aaron. So Mike's going to jump up. I'm going to interview him with some questions he's unprepared for. And just get to know him a little bit, and then he's going to share with us regarding that passage. So, Mike.
Hi, Tim.
Can you tell us your full name, please?
Yeah, my full name is Michael Hugh Padgett, but my middle name is spelt H-U-W, not H-U-G-H. And when people ask me why my middle name is not spelt in the English way, I point out that H-U-G-H is actually the Scottish spelling, whereas I'm part Welsh.
You're right.
And so my eldest son, Hugh, is forever saddled with a name that no one will ever be able to spell.
Not pronounced. Odd name. Okay.
You said what?
Not pronounced. It's
I'm just making it awkward now.
That's fine.
He just said my son has a weird name.
Anyone agree? Thank you.
That was all the hate you years. All already. You're all Scottish spies. That's what you are.
Okay. Mike, what do you do regularly? How do you spend your time?
You say, what do I do regularly? I'm thinking breakfast.
Well, that's good. That's a good thing to do regularly.
So I am the husband of but one wife, Fiona. I'm the father of four children, not just Hugh, but other children with other normal names. And I'm the senior pastor of St. Barnabas Broadway, which is a young inner city church just down the road.
Very good. Now, if you were to have any type of pet in the world, what would you call it?
I actually have two pets. Mm-hmm. One of them I would be happy to lose. It's a cat, and they explain things to me. Leave. We've actually just bought a puppy 3 weeks ago, and he's been named by my children, as you will see. His name is a name of engineer. Don't talk about spelling. We're into trouble. His name is Oscar Rocket Blastoff Padgett.
Very good. I heard that Pharrell Williams' son's named Rocket Man, so there you go, named after Rocketman Williams.
No, he's not named after him. Just like Hugh is not named after a weird name. Let's be clear.
Thanks, Mac.
Wow, that was grueling. I feel assaulted, personally. In Mark 7, we encounter this kind of tense conversation, not as tense as that was, Tim, but tense enough, with a local group of devoutly religious Jews called the Pharisees. Let me read to you the start. Mark 7:1. The Pharisees and some of the teachers of the law who had come from Jerusalem gathered around Jesus and saw some of his disciples eating food with hands that were defiled, that is, unwashed. The Pharisees and all the Jews do not eat unless they give their hands a ceremonial washing according to the tradition of the elders. When they come from the marketplace, they do not eat unless they wash. And they observe many other traditions, such as the washing of cups, pitchers, and kettles. So the teachers, the Pharisees and the teachers of the law ask Jesus, why don't your disciples live according to the tradition of the elders instead of eating their food with defiled hands? Now, I hope it's obvious to you that this passage actually speaks already into an incredibly current debate in the place of, about the place of the heart and the desires. It actually kind of rages beneath the surface of our multicultural world. Let me show you what I mean. My son is in kindergarten at an excellent inner city public school just down the road from us. And just this week we received a letter explaining that representatives of the Buddhist Nanchen Temple in Wollongong would be coming to demonstrate a Buddha washing ceremony. And at this ceremony, they would describe how the washing combined with a series of disciplines would act on the outside to make the heart of the Buddhist pure. Buddhism says, basically, follow the rules, deny the desires of your heart, okay, because they are the problem. You can tell immediately that Buddhism wasn't invented in Sydney. Okay, let me explain what I mean by that. Every city has its own story, its own kind of cultural narrative. Stephen Arm in his book, his name really is Stephen Arm, in his book, Why Cities Matter, said that in the ancient world, the kind of cultural narratives went something like this. For Jerusalem, it was tradition. For Rome, it was power. For Athens, it was, anyone guess?
Knowledge.
Nice one. And for Ephesus, it was religion. About the modern world? Try an easy one. Boston. Nice connection. I'll cover up though. Boston is knowledge, right? It's the Athens of the modern day. New York?
Coffee.
Let's try and lift ourselves above the banal, the beverages for the moment. Success. Thank you. I have a friend from the Philippines. Manila. Does anyone know the story of Manila? Opportunity. Washington. Power. Someone got it right away. You're playing the game. Hong Kong. Trade entrepreneurialism. It's that kind of thing. Singapore. We had a big Singapore contingent in my church. Order. Okay, so it was all about order. London is about influence. Paris is?
Romance,
thank you. Beijing is politics. Dublin is tradition. One analyst says that Tokyo is all about competitive conformity. What about Sydney? What is the great cultural narrative of Sydney? There's a reason you say nothing, by the way. It's a good reason. Pleasure. Great cultural narrative of Sydney is pleasure. David Williamson, the famous playwright, wrote this interaction in his play about Sydney called The Emerald City between two characters, Elaine and Colin. Elaine says, Sydney is different. Money is more important here. And you might go, the narrative of Sydney is money, wealth, success. But no, bear with it. Colin says, why more so than Melbourne? And Elaine replies, to edge yourself closer to a view. In Melbourne, all views are equally depressing, so there's no point. See, Sydney isn't about money and power and influence, right? All those things are just a mean to an end. Pleasure, and the view is just about pleasure.
The reason you said nothing is because, of course, the pursuit of pleasure is essentially shallow. In Sydney, the heart is king. Follow your heart. Your heart is who you are. Be true to yourself. You actually see this in a kind of an interesting way in the university narrative, the university story, right? Regardless of what political party you believe in, our political narrative goes on like this. The world's in a mess, right? The solution is within us. And at university, many of you will be told again and again and again, you have within you what it takes to change the world. The structures are the problem. You have within you the solution. It's just another elegy, another story about the heart. This is nowhere more obvious than in the area of sexuality, right? And one of the great failures of the conservative social movement, which is unfortunately often assumed to be synonymous with Christianity, is to fail to understand our modern or postmodern cultural narrative about sexuality. See, if you are your heart, right, then your desires are a fundamental and essential part of your identity. And expressing them, okay, is necessary to you actually being you. So if someone then says to you, you can't pursue that desire for that person, then what you will hear is, you can't be an authentic person. You see how that works? The heart is king. So, I've just talked about two different options, right? Follow the rules or follow your heart. There are technical words for that. Legalism, licentiousness, moralism versus relativism. The problem is, neither of them work. We all know that not all of our desires come from the better part of ourselves. We know this because most people have a filter between what they feel and think and what they then go on and say and do. And everyone who has that filter is thankful for having that filter, okay, and thankful that other people have that filter. We notice when we appear to have lost that filter, because then we say things or do things that we later on regret. And when someone doesn't have a filter at all, we consider it a medical condition. Okay, there's a... we get that our desires don't always come from the better part of ourselves. They don't come from the deepest part or the most considered part. They inevitably lead us, if we just go with the heart, to the shallow, to the momentary, and to the regretted. It's also true, just as we pause and reflect a little bit about that, that because our desires are really personal and in the moment and relatively unconsidered, it means the good to which they direct us isn't a very great good, if I can put it that way. There's this wonderful scene from The Incredibles where Mr. Incredible is protesting why he needs to continue to be a superhero and is engaged in an argument with his wife, Elastigirl. And he says to her, think of the greater good. And she says, I am the greatest good that you are ever going to see. Okay? It's the problem with the desire, the follow your heart kind of thing, is that it can't think socially. It can't think about the greater good. It's shallow. So Jeremiah 17 says that the heart is deceitful above all things and uncure. Or as those great poets, the Whitlams, a great Sydney band, said, my city is a whore, opened herself to the world, jumped up and down in pastel shirts, and lathered up as thinking about designs for t-shirts. Just, you guys are probably too young to remember this, but as an amusing side point, this song is called You Gotta Love This City. And clearly, some Labour Party apparatchik heard the title of the song and part of the chorus because it became the official theme song of the Sydney Olympics. And so when people were walking into the great amphitheatres and sports stadiums, this was playing. You gotta love this city, you gotta love this city for her body but not her mind. You laugh at it sometimes. Author Oliver James, in his book Affluenza, says that Sydney is the most vacuous of cities. The Dolly Parton of cities in Australia. He described it as materialistic, craven, shallow, banal, spiritless, workaholic, and shopaholic. He describes it as a city which is overflowing with pleasure and hedonism, but almost completely lacking joy. Ouch. So, relativism doesn't work, right? Because our hearts aren't right. But if you pursue moralism and follow the rules, then you'll just end up being a self-righteous hypocrite. Jesus comes to say, he says to the Pharisees, verse 6, Isaiah was right when he prophesied about you hypocrites, as it is written, these people honour me with their lips, but their hearts are far from me. They worship me in vain. Their teachings are merely human rules. You have let go of the command of God and are holding on to human tradition. See, Jesus describes the Pharisees in a way which I suspect is uncomfortably close to many of us. He describes them as living the life of two people where there should be only one. There is an outer and public and visible person and an inner, private and hidden person. And because the external person is what is visible, it's the external person that is worked on. Okay? The appearance, the abs, the diction, okay? Rather than the inner person. The external becomes privileged. And the way in which societies and individuals, they do this particularly, the way in which we privilege the external about ourselves is by heightening the distance and difference between us and others. That's what we do, right? There's only so much you can do in the exterior, and so you have to work out ways to make the exterior look better than others. And so what the Pharisees have done is they've adopted a whole set of rules, religious guidelines, about this external set of behaviours which fulfill the kind of a twin function. Firstly, these rules kind of shaped and directed the outer reality. But secondly, they highlighted the gap between the Pharisees, those who obeyed these rules, and everyone else who didn't. And this in turn allowed the Pharisees to feel more convinced of the purity of direction by looking down on others. Now, I saw a really powerful example of this just a couple of weeks ago. My church and my staff team's offices are just down the road on Broadway. And there was a protest on a Sunday, a huge protest. And I can say, better music and singing than any protest I've ever seen. And these guys had rhythm, right? This is the advantage of the left as opposed to the right. Okay, they get rhythm. And there was this parade, and it was protesting the Abbott government. Just shut down Broadway for a couple of hours. Now, just don't judge me for this. I believe in political action. I lean left at quite a steep angle. I'm traumatized by what I hear of the refugee experience in Australia. But here's something interesting. What struck me about this protest was that in seeking to love one group of people, many of the protesters held signs just filled with the most vile and hateful rhetoric I've ever seen. So what they've done is by setting up rules, a whole set of rules that said who they had to love, right, to be part of this community, you have to love refugees, you have to love trees and so on, they've given themselves permission regarding who they were allowed to hate. See how that works? True believers make the best Pharisees. And that's the problem with rule-keeping, right? It doesn't get to your heart. It describes who's in and who's out. It modifies your behaviours. But it will always leave you a self-righteous hypocrite. And always fearing disclosure, always struggling to hide who you really are from others. This, I think, is one of the major causes of the twin rise among women in our culture, anxiety and depression, and among men, porn addiction, right? Both these things are a way of dealing or responding to that gap between the inner reality and the outer persona. But God is not fooled. God sees the heart. He's not tricked by the externalities. Neither of these two ways work. And so, verse 14, Jesus called to the crowd around him, and he said, listen to me, everyone, and understand this. Jesus doesn't often speak this way, by the way. Okay, he normally just launches in, but he gathers people in close. He has something important to say. He says, listen to me, everyone, and understand this. Nothing outside a person can defile them by going into them. Rather, it is what comes out of a person that defiles them. After he left the crowd and entered the house, his disciples asked him about this parable. Are you so dull, he asked. Don't you see that nothing that enters into a person from the outside can defile them? For it doesn't go into their heart, but into their stomach, and then out of the body. In saying this, Jesus declared all foods clean, which may seem insignificant, but I'll show you why it isn't in a moment. He went on, what comes out of a person is what defiles them. For it is from within, out of a person's heart, that evil thoughts come. Sexual immorality, theft, murder, adultery, greed, malice, deceit, lewdness, envy, slander, arrogance, and folly, all these things come from inside and defile a person. Jesus says two things. Firstly, he says, don't think that just following rules will accomplish anything. Rules cannot touch your heart. They will change the decoration, but not the substance. And ultimately, he says, whatever is in your heart, it will come out. It will come out. You can't keep it in there. You can't maintain that gap between the private and the public forever. Ultimately, what is in your heart comes out. And so you see this in our world, right? Society has laid down some pretty strict rules and taboos, and that's what they are. Like, we want to think of ourselves as a culturally sophisticated society, but we have very primitive taboos about the way in which you're allowed to speak to each other face to face, right? Limits on the kind of language that you might use, the kind of body language you might use. You're not allowed to curse and to abuse and so on. You're not allowed to give in our society all your insecurities and resentments free range in your speech in public. It's just not allowed. And so some people go and they find internet discussion boards and Twitter instead. Okay? Whatever is in your heart will find a way to come out. And in saying this, we read, Jesus declared all foods clean. This may sound like a small thing, but this marker point of what they ate was actually a really important tool for the Pharisees, because food is what you did in the ancient world when you gathered together, right? It was this public statement. And when they gathered together and they ate only certain things, it was a way of saying, we're different, we're better, we're more pure. Our hearts are truer. And yet Jesus just strips them of that. On the other hand, Jesus says, the problem you have at the moment is, and I warn you, he doesn't pull his punches here, he says, your hearts are defiled. God's desire for you is that you can be one person, but the problem is that one person is inhabited by evil, and that evil is you. One of the wonderful things I think about the difference between kind of secular liberalism and Christianity is that secular liberalism does not allow you to name things as they really are. It is a blanket of cloying but ineffectual niceness that presumes that all things are kind of the same, whereas Jesus calls things as they are in order that he might solve them. Evil, he says, comes from within. We are not the solution to the world's problems. We are the world's problem. And the older we get, the more we see, the more honest we are with ourselves, the more unavoidable this truth becomes. Evil comes from within us. So what is the answer? And if following rules to maintain the exterior doesn't work, and if our interior, our heart, cannot be trusted, well, the Christian answer to this is the answer is heart surgery. The prophet Ezekiel, writing down the words of God hundreds of years before Jesus, said this, speaking God's words, I will give you a new heart and put a new spirit in you. I will remove from you your heart of stone and give you a heart of flesh. I will give you a new heart. And God's people waited and they longed because they didn't want to be hypocrites, and yet they knew they could not trust their own hearts because of their darkness. And then the Apostle Paul describes how we can receive a new heart through faith in Jesus Christ. He writes in this letter, I pray that out of his glorious riches he may strengthen you with power through his spirit in your inner being, so that Christ may dwell in your hearts through faith. So See, here's what happens when someone puts their trust in Jesus Christ. Jesus washes away all their sins, and he gives them a fresh start. And by washing away their sins, he creates a space for himself in their lives, not by cleaning up their acts, but by cleansing their consciences by his blood. And then coming into their lives, he begins that long work of reconstruction by which he renews our hearts. And the goal of this reconstruction should make any Sydney sider happy, right? It is a reorientation of our pleasures and delights. He will teach us to delight, that is to take pleasure in, all the things that are truly good and beneficial and fruitful, to take delight in what gives God delight to. So friends, if you want to stop being a hypocrite, to stop trying to just manage your life by outward rules when the inner person remains unchanged, and yet you're honest about where your heart is, the answer is this: get a new heart by trusting in Jesus.